You know, it's tempting to, this is really based on an email I got from a nice listener just a few minutes ago. These hot button issues, as the listener identified them, they do get a little tedious since we just get hit with them all the time. And I wasn't about to try and drag Mr. Skousen very deeply into this. Joel Skousen, that's S-K-O-U-S-E-N, joelskousen.com. That's one of his websites, and the other one is worldaffairsbrief.com, worldaffairsplural brief.com. And he has three books out there, Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places. Another one's called The Secure Home, and another one is How to Implement a High-Security Shelter in the Home. So check it out, joelskousen.com, worldaffairsbrief.com. Back to the hot-button issues. I think there's a lot more to this than just material that's being covered over this network or that network or the other. And I know that Coast to Coast AM, we talk about the that stuff that's way, way out there. And we've had UFO programs. I was privileged to speak with Whitley Strieber, Nick Pope, even a Satanist Winter Lake a couple of 3 years ago. So we get into all that stuff. But I cannot help but notice that old Solomon, you know, they didn't call him Solomon for nothing. Wisest man in the world has said the thing that shall be done is the thing that has been done. And there is nothing new under the sun. So what can we do in our few years upon planet Earth but observe, take action as we may, and yet don't worry about these things and work as though we are preparing an inheritance for our great-grandchildren? Well, how can you not get jacked up about it when you're always talking about this stuff? Well, do you want to participate or you just want to be a little shroom sitting there with toads sitting on top of you? No. Now, he did use the term, although the devil himself could come up with this one. Yep, that's what I'm thinking. Seems to be a great external power orchestrating all this. Either that or there are some really smart people there and makes Mensa look like a bunch of morons. And we know they're not. But we also know that some of the key players out there in the world of globalism are in fact Mensa members. We'll disclose their names another time. I think you probably know the names of a couple of them. So, you know, what about that? These UFO guys, we know they exist. People are like, oh, here we go. Put on your tinfoil hat. Wait a minute. Wait. It's undeniable. Did you see that thing? Google this. You'll see it. It's Google it, Bing it, whatever engine you use. They're the only two I use because they're quick. They're already on the thing. You have one letter and they come up. Mass UFO sighting. That means a mass of people saw it over a Canadian baseball game. It doesn't look fake at all, and it has little twinkling lights on it and so forth, and I could swear I've seen something behaving just like this in several metropolitan locations, and no reports of over the air traffic control. You can hear air traffic control over any radio. You can go to a pilot shop and buy one and listen. And I just wonder sometimes, since they haven't done the whoom, boom and blown stuff up with the ray, like War of the Worlds, you know, style destruction of military stuff, or the Day the Earth Stood Still, where, you know, Gort comes out there and just starts melting tanks and jeeps and mid people, vaporizing them. That hasn't happened. And sometimes I wonder if there are not perhaps some entities out there that really are spiritually based, meaning they operate on a level that is beyond our reality or even our perception of reality, which is why the faith aspect is so important and is and has been since the advent of the human being, an integral part of our psyche. I wonder if it is possible that these external forces really work toward our turning on each other, because they can appear and disappear. They can out-accelerate our craft. They can turn stuff off and on. They can play all kinds of tricks with us. They can scare us a little bit. They can alarm us. But perhaps they can't really annihilate us. Maybe they want to, but they can't. Perhaps even their power is limited. And the only way to do it is to get us to do it to ourselves. I wasn't going to go there with Joel Skousen, but I may next time, and I assure you it won't be another year before he comes back on the program if I have anything to say about it, because he's a strategist and a brilliant observer, and this is what he does day and night. Now then, coming up is Stuart Rhodes. Stuart Rhodes is the founder and president of Oath Keepers. He graduated summa cum laude, from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, and while attending UNLV, Stuart taught rape prevention, street crime survival, volunteer instructor for the UNLV, Nettich Women's Center. He also worked as a Nevada State Certified Concealed Carry Firearms instructor. Graduated from Yale Law School in 2004, where his paper Solving the Puzzle of Enemy Combatant Status won Yale's Judge William E. Miller Prize for Best Paper on the Bill of Rights. Now, we'll talk about the Second Amendment tonight and some other things. Not just the Second Amendment. No. Wait. It's not a gun show. We're going to talk about the trigger on an economic collapse. Talk about preparedness. Disruptions and various things that we've become used to and rely on. Because that soft chair is so nice. That soft chair that we've been sitting in has not made us more fit. It has made us less fit. So we'll get ready for Stuart Rhodes while you go and grab your proper cup of tea and I'll grab mine and be right back here in 2 minutes for Stuart Rhodes on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's September 9th in much of the world and certainly in much of this country. And it was 8 months to the day on January 9th of this year that I was privileged to speak with Stuart Rhodes, the president and founder of Oath Keepers. Welcome back, Stuart. It's great to talk to you again.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
We're not going to talk about UFOs tonight, okay?
<That's fine.
laughs> Maybe some other time. But I've got a bunch of questions here for you. I'll just let you get it rolling here. How is the Oath Keepers movement progressing? What is the health status of your organization now? Do you have more people coming on all the time?
We had a big spike after the last gun grab attempt out of Congress. But it's like an iceberg. For every person who joins, there's another 100 or even more who don't join. And a good example was recently I was at a speaking event and a young man walked up to me. He was a special warfare operative, current serving special warfare. And he let me know that in his unit, his special warfare unit, his estimate is at least 50% of them are awake and aware of what's going on. And not just to the constitutional problems, but also to the banking issues, to the Federal Reserve and the destruction of the dollar and the imminent collapse of our economy. They're awake and aware of all of this. And I found that pretty stunning. It's a pretty good percentage. And I said, what about the rank-and-file infantry units that you've been exposed to? How many of them are awake? And he said he estimated about 30%. And so that's also a very high number. It doesn't take that many guys who know what's going on and see the big picture to make a difference. And so I think that that's an indicator of our success. He told us that what we're doing is spot on. It's the right thing to do. And recently, I just learned of a book called From Dictatorship to Democracy, written by a guy named Gene Sharp back in 1993. And it was all about how to resist against, nonviolently, how to resist against a dictatorship. And one of the things he says in there is a key population is the military and police, because that's one of the pillars of power of a dictatorship is the police and military. Sure. And it's just kind of nice confirmation that we've been on the right track for years now. We've been focusing on the guys with the guns. And you talked earlier about a lady who was bombarded, and that's how a lot of people feel. That they feel overwhelmed with information, overwhelmed with scandals, overwhelmed with bad news. And folks need to realize you can't just be reactive. You have to be proactive. Go undermine the regime. Go do what they don't want you to do. And one of the key things is to reach out to the guys with the guns. Another big one is to become economically independent and not just there for them to push the buttons. And that's what's going to happen to us now as an economic button is ready to be pushed on us like an economic neutron bomb. All they have to do is crash the dollar. 2 years ago, my board of directors sat down and brainstormed. If we were the bad guys, what would we do to win, to scrap the Constitution once and for all and win. And the result they came back with is that they would crash the economy intentionally if they were the bad guys. Then in the aftermath of that, that's where you can round up the dissidents. That's where you can declare martial law. All you have to do is kill the dollar, collapse the economy, and wait. Wait a month, two, three, for the country to implode into chaos like a nationwide Katrina. And in that chaos and desperation of people, you know, being hungry, even starving, and being killed for food, things like happened in Katrina, in that chaos, and they come in like the cavalry and say, we're here to save you. And the answer is the nation state is now outdated. The Federal Reserve, you know, the problem was wasn't big enough. And so here's our answer. And they already have their answer waiting in the wing. And it's a worldwide version of the Federal Reserve, a world currency, and a world government. And so that's what their best plan is. And I believe that's actually their plan, is to use an economic collapse as a catalyst for their change. And so looking at that, we have to find ways to stop that and make sure that we have an alternative that is getting back to our Constitution and getting back to individual responsibility and liberty for ourselves.
We'll underscore that a little bit, Stuart. What is that alternative position?
Well, what they've done is they've taken the founder's design, the founder's republic, and they've turned it upside down. For example, the great reserve of power was to the people themselves and the states. And the critical institution for the people and the states was their militia. As Dr. Edwin Vieira calls it, it's the constitutional homeland security. Is we, the people, are supposed to be our own security. And it's not just military. It's a military function. A posse is a law enforcement function. Once again, the sheriff would rely upon the people themselves. And that's a safe place to put that power. You cannot be tyrannized using you. It's a good example in the modern world is Switzerland. In Switzerland, they don't have a massive standing army like we do. They have a citizens' militia. It'd be nearly impossible for a dictator to arise in Switzerland and try to call up the militia to suppress the people, because the militia is the people. And that was the founder's answer also, you know, to that ancient question of who shall guard the guardians. You should be your own guardians. Well, of course, we don't have a militia anymore. We don't have a militia anymore. We don't have economic independence. We're reliant upon the Federal Reserve. You're waiting for Bernanke to come out like the Groundhog Day, see which way his shadow is going to go. You're waiting for him to, you know, issue his edicts and decide whether or not we're going to, you know, pump up more money into the economy or not. And
I'm not convinced they're his edicts.
Pardon?
I'm not convinced they're his edicts.
Well, right. But what people are looking to, you know, they look at the Fed, they look at the chairman of the Fed. I think you're right. There's somebody behind the scenes, same goes for Obama, and the same was true for Bush. All of these presidents are being manipulated, but the process is the same. As my good friend Brandon Smith from AltMarket points out, it's a relentless campaign towards centralization of power, stripping power out of the hands of the people. Military, police powers, their economic powers, their own power over law, the power of the jury. You know, all of these things are being taken out of their hands, and all they're left with is the voting box. They're told that's your only responsibility as a citizen is to go vote. And they want you to believe that this is the right way to be. So this is normal, and it's not. It's not a condition that sustains freedom. It's a condition that will lead to a dictatorship. And that's why I started Oath Keepers. I could see the pieces of the puzzle being put in place. As a student of history, I saw we were going down exactly the same road as Stasi East Germany, as Nazi Germany, as Stalinist Russia. It's the same. Centralizing power in the hands of the state, nationalizing all the police, militarizing all the police, and then unleashing the military on the people themselves. And this is what our nation is now doing. And so it's not just a constitutional assault and an assault through the law. It's also an economic assault. And I really do believe that it's going to be a 1-2 punch. They'll use an economic collapse. And now the latest insight that we've added to that synopsis about how we would do it if we were the bad guys is that if you make it part of a war, like say with Syria, the U.S. invades Syria, and Brandon Smith pointed this out recently in an article, this would be the perfect cover event for the bankers. They could collapse the dollar through the Chinese and the Russians. All they have to do is dump the dollar on the world market. The Chinese could sell off the remaining U.S. treasuries and cause a run on the dollar to sell it all off. If they did that in response to a U.S. attack on Syria, the population would blame the Chinese or blame the Russians. They would not blame the bankers for destroying our economy.
And right.
The government could say, hey, look, we were stabbed in the back by people we thought were our allies, the Chinese. It's all their fault. And you still wind up with a collapsed economy and chaos. And war is the health of the state. Well, so is chaos and emergency. Since 9/11, we've seen it. A destruction of our Constitution like none other since, you know, there's been precedents in the past. In the Civil War, Lincoln did many things that were unconstitutional in the name of fighting the war. During World War II, you had the internment of Japanese Americans. You had a, you know, detention of U.S. citizens by military detention. Things like that happen in wartime. But here with 9/11, it's perpetual warfare. And so you have this, you would have this opportunity for them to blame it on the war again, collapse the economy, take advantage of that chaos to finally scrap the Constitution. And any of us who oppose them, they would accuse us of being traitors and aiding the enemy. So it'd be like their dream way to do it is to make it a wartime thing. The Chinese, as a war measure, attack us economically, and they could. Right now, China and Russia really have their fingers on an economic neutron bomb, but they didn't build it. It was built by the Federal Reserve. It was built by Congress. It was built by all the politicians, both left and right, who spent us into oblivion. They put us in a position of being so vulnerable. You know, an EMP, most folks understand what an EMP strike would do to the United States. If you've read the book One Second After, you know the horrific scenario that they paint of what would happen if you would have multiple electromagnetic pulses, you know, nukes being detonated at high altitude across the country. You'd lose all your power grid, and you would be thrown back into the 1800s almost instantly. And that would cause, a lot of experts predict, a massive die-off. Well, this is kind of like an economic EMP or an economic neutron bomb that kills the people, that leaves the infrastructure. Because all they have to do is dump the dollar and destroy our currency. And the same thing would happen here that happened in Weimar Germany or happened in Argentina. And I really encourage people to go read a book called When Money Dies.
Right.
When Money Dies. It details what happened in Germany, Austria, and Hungary in the 1920s and 30s.
Who's that by, Stuart?
Pardon?
Who is the book by?
I'll go look it up. I can't remember the author's name, but I'll look up right now.
Well, let me ask you something. Now we've got time to have a nice that long conversation that Coast to Coast is famous for. Philosophically speaking, you know, when a civilization becomes more complex, the problems become more complex, and we have a lot of people are really just in despair about this because we have internal problems, we have external problems, and it's all, you know. See, whenever any target is identified, I read a letter that my father had written in 1942, and he said, there's some noise over in such and such. I can't really tell you where, and we may have to go over there and quiet them down. He says, it's funny. You see the effects of war, but you never really see the enemy. And I thought that was quite a poignant point that he made. What I'm getting at is that I think as we go through our conversation tonight, we should remind our audience that we have to face these problems one way or another. As a master say, you can put one hand over your face, but the sun's still there. You can put both hands over your face, but the sun is still there. So when you face the problem and you really look at it hard, take a good hard look at it, particularly if it's a problem that you fear, suddenly the fear goes away and understanding begins to set in. So let's keep that in mind. And as we go through the night, I want to talk to you about the militarization of the police and if that's going to increase or if that's going to steady up at some point or maybe even recede a little bit. Remember, the left flank has moved over to the right and the right flank has moved over to the left. I'll take any suggestions as to what we can do about that. We'll be back with Stuart Rhodes, the founder and president of Oath Keepers, just a few minutes on Coast to Coast AM. On the coasttocoastam.com website, in the news, computer program uses Twitter to map mood of nation. That's from BBC News. I have to go back to an email I got earlier from a friend of the program who said, you know, back in the day, there was this person, I think I'll just keep it all neutral, who said, which is older, Jesus or the dinosaurs? And he looked at his friend and said, well, a little over 2,000 years to 25 million years. What do you think? And the person just kept staring at him. And he said, yep, this was a young person. And I knew that we were lost the moment that this person and peer group reached the age where they were to assume control, where it's all over for us. Anyway, six-clawed lobster captured off of Hyannis. Yes, a six-clawed lobster. I wonder if it swam over from Fukushima. Mystery from above in Brooklyn as chunks of ice fall from the sky. No, it wasn't blue ice either. Size of softballs. It's ridiculous. And a mystery surrounds the death of an entire elk herd. I got to throw this in real quick for you. You asked for RF detectors and measurement instruments to find out about your smart meter, your cell phone towers, your high-tension power lines, the grid that you're living in inside your home and everything else. Where to get one? Located one for you. If you go to caravantomidnight.com, that's my little site there, you'll find a device from safelivingtechnology.co, not com, just .co. If you were to go to safelivingtechnology.co and learn all you need to know about this particular device, which is pretty good device, you could type in the promo code John B and they'll send you a free case. Also on Caravan to Midnight, you will find Dave Stetzer's dirty electricity filters and a little meter. And there's a little treat for you there, too, a little gift. You buy five, you get one free. You buy 10, you get two free. And they're good for you. And some radiation-removing water filtration systems. Some water filtration systems take the fluoride out. They are fluoride removal specific devices. And, of course, our friend Vince Mazur at MazurInstruments.com has his excellent Geiger counters there for you. And if you were to go to MazurInstruments.com, and you decide you wanted one, you could type John B. into the promo box there and get yourself a free internationally enabled AC adapter. Always have a little gift for you because you are a gift to us. We at Coast to Coast AM will be right back with Stuart Rhodes. Stand by. Stuart Rhodes, founder and president of Oath Keepers. I committed a boo-boo, pulled you into it, and many, many people have witnessed it. You know what it is?
No, what's that?
Some people don't know who the heck you are. And or what Oath Keepers is. Thanks, Janine. That's right. The women are smarter. You know, I was so anxious, as Janine pointed out, to get into it with you and discuss these subjects that give us a quick little synopsis of what Oath Keepers is. You've been on the program several times, and you know, we got just kind of took for granted that nobody new has joined the party, and they're going, who's this Oath Keepers guy? What do they do? The name pretty much says it all. You're retired and active police and military, yes?
And first responders, like police or firefighters as well.
All right. And what do you do? I mean, do you lecture? Do you tour?
Well, we do a lot of things, but the two big parts of our mission is, number one, to reach out to the current serving in the military especially, but also police, sheriff's offices, and the first responders, and to remind them of their oath to the Constitution, and to remind them that they have a duty and obligation under that oath to refuse unlawful orders as a way to defend the Constitution and refuse to be used against the people, and even in the extremists, to defend the people against a government gone rogue. That's why I brought up that special warfare NCO that I talked to. This is a critical mission. If the guys with the guns, this is what the powers that be rely on, is that their orders will be followed. But if their orders are not followed, they're powerless. And so it's a critical mission. And the other side of the mission is to reach out to all the veterans and retired police officers, retired military, who have taken that oath and talk about their duties and responsibilities. And that includes being leaders in their community, being a force in their community for stability during crisis, stepping in and taking care of things in the community themselves, so you are not desperate and not waiting for FEMA to come, you know, quote unquote, rescue you or DHS. If the veterans will do it, that takes away the emergency, it takes away the excuse for martial law. And so we're really trying to organize all the veteran organizations. Every VFW should be squared away as a unit, to be there for the sheriff as the posse, to be there to serve as the militia in their county, to take care of business locally themselves. So those are the two key missions of Oath Keepers, is to make sure that we, us veterans, I was a paratrooper in the Army. I'm an Army veteran. So all of us veterans have a duty and responsibility to step up right now and flip that paradigm back, to put the power back in the hands of the people. It starts with ourselves and our neighborhoods, our towns, and our counties. That's the most critical place to focus, not in Washington, D.C. You're not going to fix it. It's too late. The Titanic's going down. But what you need to do is get back on the USS Constitution.
What about all this militarization of the police? A lot of departments are buying up all this heavy gear, and you know, they, I understand they're routinely sending SWAT teams to serve felony warrants on people. And what's up with that? Because we are seeing an increased police power.
Well, it was already bad enough under the so-called war on drugs. That's what had already shifted them into a wartime or perspective, seeing every American as a possible druggie, every American as a suspect. That was already bad. Radley Balco has done some really good work on this. He has a new book out about it. But then it got even worse post 9/11. Now you had the creation of DHS, which was, let's be honest, it's the Gestapo. It's a version of the Gestapo. And in Germany, the same thing happened there. They federalized, they nationalized all the police departments, and eventually the Gestapo was put in command of every police department in Germany. And it had been, you can look up on Wikipedia, the history of the Gestapo. You know, the German provinces, traditionally, all law enforcement functions in the provinces were local matters. They were not national matters. They changed that. They nationalized them. Their command and control came from the Gestapo. Same thing's happening now. You have DHS reaching its tentacles down into every police department in the country. And one of the things they do is give them free MRAPs, free armored vehicles, like the Bearcat. Right now in Concord, New Hampshire, there's an issue with the police chief there applying for a free MRAP, armored Bearcat from DHS. And in his application, he lists the Free State Project, a bunch of libertarians, and also the Occupy movement of New Hampshire as two terrorist threats that justify him having an armored vehicle. So very overtly stating that he's going to use this armored vehicle against people who are nonviolent, who haven't done anything other than advocate for individual liberty. He sees
this. You know, Stuart, when George Bush started with this Department of Homeland Security, I thought, that doesn't have a good ring to it. The fatherland, the motherland, and now the homeland. And, you know, most people are not aware that, and I wasn't until I got into it a little bit, that the Department of Homeland Security, you would think it's like, all right, we'll secure our homeland against external threats. But they do drug interdiction. They do gun trafficking interdiction. They do child porn and human trafficking interdiction, investigation and arrest.
Everything.
They're
nationalizing. And through that, they're nationalizing the police. These fusion centers are now in every community. They do these regional task forces. And it's all under the banner, under the umbrella of DHS. And that is exactly upside down. As I said earlier, the constitutional Homeland Security is the militia. That's who's supposed to be taking care of things. At your local level, you and your neighbors. But now they bring in people from, you know, the feds come in with agents from outside of your neighborhood. They're not accountable to you. They're not accountable to your sheriff unless your sheriff stands up to them. And they're from somewhere else. And a good example of why that's bad is during Hurricane Katrina. You might have seen the video of a little old lady in her kitchen being tackled to the floor by a police officer.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a California Highway Patrolman who was federalized and brought to Louisiana. He's not accountable to her, doesn't even know her, doesn't know anybody in the neighborhood. He's from somewhere else. He's a federalized cop from somewhere else who came in there and strong-armed her, wrestled her, tackled her to the ground, and broke her arm. So as an example of what they do, they bring people from outside your community and bring them in and federalize them. But they also will use, this is what DHS is doing. Let's just be, you know, like Patrick Henry said, it's better to know the truth, know the worst, and to provide for it than to delude yourself with false hope. We need to see what's happening. What they're doing is they're pre-positioning supplies, and they are using the local SWAT teams as a force multiplier. When DHS comes to kick down your door, they'll bring a local SWAT team with them. With their armored vehicle, they've already given the local SWAT team and all the other goodies they've given them. They've already been integrated with DHS in these regional task forces in these fusion centers, they vet them. They know that they're going to do what they're told them to do. That's who they're going to use. They use the steroid freaks who like to come kick in doors. That's their force multiplier.
Steroid so freaks?
Coming. Right.
Steroid freaks.
Sure.
Like for real.
Guys who were, you know, they pump up on steroids and are really into kicking in doors. I know because I had a friend who became like that. He was into it. He joined the Border Patrol, and he went into Customs, and he told me he likes kicking in doors, and he gets off on it. So those are the guys. They find guys like that, and that's who they put on those teams. They come kicking your door. And just like in Soviet Union, it was the Kapos, and it was the Cheka. You've got your select squads, the goon squads that will go do this stuff. How do you counter that?
Yeah.
The founders gave us the answer. The way you counter it is not to cower in your home waiting for the knock at the door, hoping they don't come to you. The way you counter it is for everybody to organize in your neighborhood, in your community, to stand up together. They cannot do it to you. They can't black bag you in the middle of the night if all your neighbors are with you. Then it turns into Lexington and Concord. They get their butts handed to them, and they know it. And then they'll have to rely on the standing army and the Marine Corps. If you force them to have to pull out all the stops, then it takes off the mask, takes off the gloves, and you can see them what they really are. And now you're dealing with reliance upon the great mass of the U.S. military. And as we already know, a large number of them are waking up. So they don't want you to organize. They want you to be vulnerable to these select teams that will come in the middle of the night. The only way to counter that is for you to organize.
You know, the question that I want to ask you, I have weighed over the last couple of minutes carefully, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it to you anyway. I was on Alex Jones's show earlier today and discussed this briefly, but I want to bring it up here. In this picture with Tom Cruise, and I make movie references because a lot of people see him and a lot of messages and stories are carried around that way since people seem to see more films than they read books. So it's a good reference point. The movie Jack Reacher, there was a with Cruise, there was a discussion of people who joined the military because it was a legal way to kill people. And I'm wondering, in the discussion with Alex, I said if certainly there must be a measurable percentage of people who do this in the military, probably in the police department as well. And I was wondering if there are. If it's possible that politicians get into it because there's a legal way to kill masses of people, but we won't pick on the politicians right now. You just mentioned steroid freaks. Is there any way to determine how many people have become peace officers because there's a good chance they'll be able to engage somebody and kill them legally? I mean, a SWAT team just killed a 107-year-old man in a shootout up in Arkansas, and I can't imagine that one flash grenade or a little stun grenade wouldn't have done the job. Probably would have given the old boy a heart attack. But instead, here comes SWAT, and they whack out this 107-year-old man. Now, he allegedly had pulled a gun on some people and popped off a cap at the police, which is always a pretty bad idea. But I'm just wondering where this is headed. Do we know we have psychos in the government, so do we also have psychos in the police and military? That's the question.
Well, I saw a study recently that talked about sociopaths and the professions they gravitate towards. And I think the number one profession, of course, was lawyers and surgeons, lawyers and surgeons.
Really?
And politicians, in other words, positions of power. But one of them was also police officers. I believe it was number four on the list. So, yes, but it's you have sociopaths in society. I would say if you can estimate 10% of the population, 1 out of 10 people is kind of like that.
That's
but
a lot.
Usually they're suppressed because the majority are still good. That's why an armed society is successful, because most people are still good. Most people do have a conscience. You don't want to let the sociopaths run wild. This is the problem with government. It does attract the sociopaths. And so the way you counter this is that's why you don't want a select guardian class. You don't want the professional warrior class. I don't believe in this idea that, you know, I'm not a sheepdog. I was a paratrooper, but I never saw myself as a sheepdog, because we shouldn't have a nation of sheep. If you have a nation of sheep, you will have a government of wolves. And so it's very dangerous to ever have a select body of guardians. Every American should be a warrior. Every American is a sheepdog. That way you, the majority is good, and if all of you are responsible for your own security and for your own community security, you are the militia, you are the posse, you are the military force and the police force in your community, you can suppress the sociopaths. But if you turn into a bunch of milquetoast, fat, lazy people sitting on a couch watching, you know, eating bonbons and watching Dancing with the Stars, and you relegate your responsibility to be the force in your community of stability and honor, if you relegate that to professionals, you will get a professional class that self-selects, and all of the sociopaths are drawn to it. Doesn't mean they're all like that. Of course not. But you will get more and more of them. That's why you cannot have it where you only have a special guardian class, because they will self-select. You will get more and more of them in there, and the government can more easily purge out the ones who have honor and integrity. That's what's happening. If the, you're a good police officer and you will not go along with the corruption, they will purge you out. And the same thing's happening in the military, which is why I don't want everybody who's a good man in the military to join Oath Keepers. I prefer they be under the surface, that big mass of the iceberg they cannot identify. And that is true. We got feedback from someone within the NSA that they're worried about what they call the Oath Keeper effect. This is the mass of people within the military who do have honor and integrity and courage and join for the right reasons. Like when I joined as a paratrooper, I joined because it was a family history and like a family heritage of serving in the military. I didn't join to have power. I joined to serve. And a lot of people in the military are the same way. That's why they have to sell. They have to go and very carefully pull people out and vet them and do analysis of their mental makeup and make sure they select the ones who will do whatever they tell them to do. Those are the hit squads.
And is this why the returning vets have been demonized? Napolitano was one of them who did it as potential terrorists. These veterans returning from the Middle East are potential terrorists.
Yeah,
I mean, what the hell is that?
It's so perverse. When you're over there doing their bidding, they want to wrap you in the flag and call you a hero. But as soon as you come home and you're no longer under their direct control, now you're a liability because you have training. You have abilities. You can fight. And
you know,
they also know you're not afraid. You've got courage.
You know, we got about 2 minutes until we need to take a break. So when you hear the music, just find a little stopping point so I don't step on you, because I'll have to, or the computer will step on both of us. But what is the syndrome that I seem to observe? And if it's my imagination, please indicate that it's my imagination. But I'm curious about something. Two people are having a confrontation. Somebody comes up and messes with somebody. But he's picked the wrong guy. This time he's bumped into somebody he shouldn't have messed with. And the would-be victim is now not the victim. And he smacks this guy and knocks him down. The police show up, and instantly the guy who has just been accosted by this fool, who is now bleeding and crying on the sidewalk, the person who has defended himself is now the one being slammed up on the car with a gun screwed into his ear. In other days, it was not like this. It was the police would walk up and go, what's going on here? And it would become clear to them pretty quick who was the antagonist and who was the protagonist. Doesn't seem to be that way anymore. If you are involved in any way in an altercation, you're going under the hood of the car and you're going to have a knee against your neck or something. Am I right or wrong?
That's true in some places. I would say in Boston and places back east, yes. In rural Montana, nope. It's still kind of the old way. So depending on where you're at.
All right. So there are regional differences. There is no uniform code of performance.
Gotcha.
All right.
More
I can
rural
buy that.
Among the sheriff's departments and place guys who are raised in the West, it's a different ballgame.
All right, well, there it is. Let's do a little news and a few spots and all that. A most enjoyable conversation with you tonight, Stuart Rhodes, president and founder of Oath Keepers, and we have bunches more to discuss, and we will do when we return on Coast to Coast AM.